our next guest, Phil Coulter. And I don't know if he cringes at some of these songs or not, but just we'll play a wee medley, wee snippets here. Slick Bay City Rollers, and then Elvis, you know, just an everyday run-of-the-mill list of people that you write for. Hello, Phil, how you doing?
How you doing, Johnny? Great
do,
to be
do you
here.
Cringe at any of those?
No, I mean, not at all. I mean, you know, they mean different things to me. You know, I would be probably prouder of my boy, and proud of the fact that I'm the only non-American songwriter who's written a hit single for Elvis Presley.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm of that era, Johnny, that you know, I was around when Presley arrived on the scene and transformed pop music. Pop music up until then was kind of safe, you know. I can remember songs like How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? Or She Wears Red Feathers in a Hooly Hooly yeah. Skirt. And then along came Presley and changed the whole face of pop music.
The chart was full of, I remember hearing someone call it Butlin's music.
Yeah, Sing you know, Little Birdie and you know yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. Presley made him far more sexy, you know, and very kind of visceral. And there's a lot of my contemporaries and friends in the music business who would all own up to the fact that it was Presley that sort of, you know,
lit the fire. John Lennon's famous quote, before Elvis there was nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably a bit cruel because there were some good songs and some great melodies. But in the main, you know, what was lacking was that, you know, was that real passion, that real visceral sort of thing that Presley brought.
Did you write it for Elvis, or was it a song that you had on the go that someone picked up?
No, it's quite
for
a
him?
Story. I wrote it, believe this or believe it not, for Richard Harris.
All right.
And curious, another thing about that song, I wrote it with a great pal of mine in France. I used to work a lot in France and work with some of the big French artists. And I wrote My Boy with one of my French songwriting friends and recorded it first with Richard Harris. You may remember Richard Harris had that massive hit with MacArthur Park off
yeah.
the album Tramp Shining. And I used to drink in the same pub as Harris. Much still have the marks on my back from that era.
I was going to say, tough. Yeah.
But over a period of months and a lot of drink, I persuaded Harris, who hadn't recorded for a couple of years after the Jimmy Webb thing, to go back in the studio, and we did this album called My Boy. And it was a kind of story album, as they all tended to be back in that era. And My Boy was the last track. And that charted in America. We toured America for a couple of months with like 30-piece orchestra. And then Harris went back to making movies, and that seemed to be the end of that.
Yeah.
And it was maybe a year later when I got a call in the middle of the night from Albert Hammond. You know Albert Hammond,
yeah.
the songwriter, great buddy of mine. And he had just been to see Presley in concert in Vegas. And he called me and said, Coulter, you know, you lucky bugger, Presley's singing your song.
Joking.
That's the first I was aware of it. And then it was months after that before Presley got around to recording it. Months after that until it was released on an album. And months after that before it was released as a single. But it was well worth waiting for, Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, that must be one of the biggest buzzes ever. If you're sitting and listening to the radio, I was going to say at home, listening to it anywhere, and Elvis is singing your song, is it?
It's one of the few that does give me a bit of get of the good
pimples. This was after, you know, you'd won the Eurovision Song Contest. You were robbed in another Eurovision Song Contest. That's all come out now that Franco gave orders that Cliff Richard wasn't allowed to win.
After all of this, after all of this time, I mean, when I heard that, I just smiled. If I discovered that, you know, the year that I was cheated, I'd have been very, very indignant. But, you know, with the passage of time, and particularly because Congratulations is a song that has clothed, fed and educated a couple of my kids, so I can't feel bad. You know, I can't feel bad about that.
There isn't a celebration goes on anywhere or an award ceremony that it doesn't get played.
I would happily have about 25 of those songs in my back catalogue if I could. That's a song that just keeps going on and on, you know.
Yeah.
That's a song Which songwriters, we refer to that as a pension song.
Yeah.
You know, and you need a bunch of those if you're going to sustain.
It's funny, I played Make Me Smile by Steve Harley earlier on, and he told me that as well. Every year, that gets him a nice wee check, every year.
That's a great record. Great guitar solo.
But as you said, it's one of those that will always be played.
Please God.
Yeah.
Please God.
So you had the Elvis thing, as I say, a big success in Eurovision, and then you were writing for the Bay City Rollers. Or was it like Chin and Chapman of the same era?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. When I went into songwriting first, if there were 20 of the top 20, 15 of those acts were recording songs written by songwriters.
Yeah.
10 years later, of those top 20, 15 of the top 20 were writing their own songs.
That's right.
You know, they were self-contained acts, the Beatles or whatever it might be. So it became narrower and narrower, the window for a songwriter to get his songs recorded. So I figured the only way to get into this game is to become a record producer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd been working in studios all of that time as well as an arranger. So the graduation to becoming a producer wasn't a huge one. And so we set about looking for an act that would become a vehicle for the songs, if you like. And that coincided with the evolution of the teeny bopper.
That's right.
You know, record executives comfortably believed that kids buying records were like 15, 16 and 17. And then it dawned on them, no, they're not. They're 8, 9 and 10.
That's right, yeah. And it's all the parent pressure. It's, mommy, get me that.
Exactly.
You know?
And it's maintained to this day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, One Direction are the Bay City Rollers of today, you know. And it's kids breaking their mothers' and fathers' hearts to bring them to the concert or buy the record and stuff. So we didn't have a homegrown teeny bopper act. There was David Cassidy, and there was the Jackson 5, and there was the Partridge Family and all of that kind of stuff, who were handling the teeny bopper phenomenon, all American acts. The Bay City Rollers were the first homegrown ones, so they became, thankfully, like a worldwide phenomenon. I keep telling Louis Walsh that he's never yet had a boy band that's come close to the success of the Bay City Rollers. I enjoy telling him that too.
But I mean, okay, lyrically, the Rollers songs aren't going to win the Ivor Novello Award, but the trick was everybody could sing along.
That's exactly. It's horses for courses, you know. You can't compare Shang-a-Lang with The Town I Love So Well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a completely different thing.
But that was the trick. To target the audience who want to clap and tramp their feet, dance on the tables, and
to this
sing.
Day, Johnny, there are still DJs who work parties and things and say the sure way of getting people on the floor is to play some Bay City Rollers. Right?
Oh, listen, I mean, I make no secret. I've been doing 70s nights for the last 12 years.
Good for you.
And Shang-a-Lang.
Perfect.
And all of those.
Excellent.
And that's it. And you know, and that's Shang-a-Lang's your banker.
Yeah.
Right, I'm really going to wreck the place now with
good
this.
Man. Really?
Listen, teenagers now will get up to it.
That's great to hear.
You know, you know, still, there's another pension song.
Excellent.
For you. You've had a load of pensions.
Better. It's getting better and better.
Listen, your Ulster Toddler Awards, is it? Is
that what Lifetime you're, Achievement you're, Award you're tonight for the
Lifetime Achievement. Yeah. Hey, it's taken them a while, hasn't it?
Well, you know, you wonder sometimes when you get offered these Lifetime Achievement Awards if it's not some kind of subtle way of saying, hey, are you still around? Is it not time you kind of moved over? There's a lot of young fellas looking for the work, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm delighted. I'm absolutely thrilled to get it because I'll tell you, Johnny, there is something a bit different about getting a recognition in your own place from your own people, because, you know, we're not widely known for celebrating our own, you know what I mean?
No, we're not.
So it's great. It's great really to be, you know, to get the award, and I'm very thrilled about it.
I've cousins in America who would dine out in restaurants, and people who act in soaps and all would walk in, and everybody in the restaurant stands up. You know, if an actor walks in, or a pop star, whatever, over here would be, there's your man.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Yeah, look at him, yeah. Yeah, and they said, I remember how many didn't have a nurse in his trousers.
Well, that's right. Listen, if anybody needs brought down to earth, just tell them to live here for a while.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Listen,
sure.
Ireland's Call, I wanted to ask you
yes.
about. Were you particularly proud of that?
Yeah, because it was a tricky one, you know, and I was asked to come up with the song. And what that was IRF, you were just kind of confronting an elephant in the drawing room. There had been, for a long time, there needed to be a song that players from the North as well as from the South and supporters from the North as well as from the South could sing comfortably and with enthusiasm. And there had never been one. They had tried Danny Boy, they tried the Rose of Tralee previously and stuff. So they asked me if I could step up to the plate. And I think what was smart on their part was that they asked somebody from the North. Because you have to be from here to understand the nuances. You have to be from here to understand the sensibilities and to respect the sensibilities.
You needed to know when you had done sort of walk that political tightrope. So
exactly.
That's
I knew. I wrote the tune probably like in a week or so. But then just honing in on the words and making sure that, you know, you had to be very selective about how the words were. And I think once I came up with like the four proud provinces of Ireland, I thought, well, nobody can object to that. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
No, it took a while before it was accepted by the rugby crowd, Johnny, but when it did, it of course, I get a great kick now when I'm at a rugby game with a couple of my sons, and the sense that I know that when I fall off the perch and they're going to rugby games, they're still going to be singing the title or the singing Ireland's call.
Yeah, no, it's stirring stuff. You know, it must give you a shiver up your spine to know that the crowds are singing a song that you wrote.
You know, some songs you can't quantify, you know, I mean, in terms of records sold or dollars earned. And that would be one of them. You know, Ireland's call hasn't sold 10 million records, but it is now part of the fibre of life, you know, it's passed into the public domain, and that's a tougher thing if you want for a songwriter, you know.
Yeah. The Tranquility albums, I worked in a record shop years ago, and we used to shift those. I tell you, different albums would come in, and it might be Rumours, it might be Batter to Hell, and the 5 or 10 copies went up in the racks, right? Yours never even got out of the box. I'm serious. There'd be a steady queue, Tranquility, Peace and Tranquility, whatever. You must have made fortunes out of them.
That was Classic Tranquility became the biggest selling record ever in the Irish record industry. And then when I wasn't about to walk away from it, having stumbled upon the success of that, all of my training would have told me, you got to get back in the game. So actually, Sea of Tranquility outsold Classic Tranquility. And those two, I mean, we're talking about 400,000 copies in Ireland alone.
That's incredible.
But you'd never do that these days. Never. No. It was, and I had huge support in the North. I mean, I think per head of population, more people in the North bought those albums than anywhere else.
Yeah, no, seriously, there'd be a separate queue for your albums.
And the boxes, the colder queue over
and
here,
there was 50 boxes in a big cardboard box, and they never got out in the shelves. You just rip the lid off the box and sell them from the box.
Happy days.
You know. And the only other record that did that was Band-Aid.
Right.
You know. So, I remember that. It was great.
It's good company.
The guys in the record industry loved you. You know, on the phone, give us more colder. What one do you want? What have we got?
I love it.
Well, listen, Phil, I've got to go and take the news, but thanks for coming in.
My great pleasure, Johnny.
Enjoy your... Barry Douglas is presenting the award.
Barry is, yeah. I'm delighted about that because he's a real musical hero. You know, one of the finest piano players in the planet. So it's nice to have a bit of somebody of substance like Barry. I'm thrilled.
Brilliant. Phil, thanks very much.
Thank you, John.
Cheers now.